I just want to put this in perspective.
Yeah.
This is after 50 years here. Somebody asked Gary, where does this group rank?
Yeah.
In the classes coming through the high school. I can say, without fear of contradiction, that's not true. I'll get contradicted. But in my own mind, no question. Greatest group of athletes to come through here in at least 50 years.
Let's go.
How can you argue that?
Yeah, you can't. Let's go around the table. Terry, we'll begin with you.
Okay.
Talk about your memories of that year. Not only just in football, but again, it was. We talk about this undefeated football team, as we should. But as we've already recounted, the successes in the other sport, and we haven't even touched on track.
Yeah.
And there were some outstanding athletes in track. Did you guys know at that time that collectively you were that good?
Not really, but, you know, we played in YMCA basketball when we were in grade school, and Larry and I and Wegoff were at the Salem Lutheran. We played sports. We'd come over and play Turner. And so we played competitively and in baseball and stuff. We knew we had good athletes. We just didn't know how successful we were going to be. And then when we got into high school, the team just started to get better and better.
Yeah.
And we worked together. We were such a great team. You know, they were great athletes, but we all worked together, I think, very well.
I think that's one of the things we kind of lose sight of at times when you look at good teams. Sure, they got good athletes. But we've seen at the professional level teams with very good athletes.
Yeah.
Very good players in whatever sport you have. And they just don't click.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case with this group.
I was thinking earlier, maybe Gary can touch on this. No junior high football then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No youth football league.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the coach that showed you guys how to put your pads on for the first time?
Well, I wrote about that, and I always think it's kind of funny. So we show up as freshmen, and none of us had ever played football before. Yeah. If we ever had any football equipment on is what you got for Christmas, you know, with a helmet, a plastic helmet, and maybe somebody had a pair of shoulder pads or whatever.
Cardboard.
But we went out and played tackle football, and it's a wonder we didn't have broken collarbones and everything else. But we show up for freshman football, and I'll tell you two pieces of it. One is, there's a hand-me-down system in the equipment, okay?
Yeah.
And by the time they get to the freshmen, it's beyond hand-me-downs. Don Cook told me last night that he remembered they walk in, there's a big pile of shoes. I'm sure they probably had them in sizes, but I'm not even sure they did. And he said the cleats on them looked like they were about 6 inches long. And it's like you go get a... You know, you go by and they hand you a pair of shoulder pads, they hand you a pair of shoes or whatever, and then the next thing is, what is all this stuff? Where does it go? Where does it fit? What thigh pads? There's a right way and a wrong way to put on thigh. You know, hip pads have a back and a front. You know, so the first thing you got to do is got to get all that stuff and figure it out, and then you put it all on. You go, how am I ever going to run in all this stuff? So it was. And we were all in the same boat. It wasn't like one guy was, smarter than the other. We helped each other. And I think that's a big piece of it, too, was there wasn't a big click of the in guys and the out guys. We were all in the same boat. And the other piece to your question, we had great coaches. Okay. And so it was a different era. You respected the coach, and if he said, run up that hill, you ran up that hill. You didn't ask questions.
You didn't ask
you
why.
Didn't. And part of it was you wanted to play, and you knew you had to impress him to be able to play. But a Coach Jones, Rosenberger, Krauser, those guys, they didn't take any guff. I mean, you'd be running all day if you said something. And Don Cook told me last night, he said, you remember running around the fence? How many hours we had to run around? If you didn't do what you were supposed to do, Rosenberger would say, go take off. And he might, a half hour later, he might go, oh, okay, you can stop. You know?
Gretchen, you related a story to me. When you left the high school, you went to Southern Illinois Carbondale, correct?
That's correct.
And then from there went to North Texas.
Yes.
Played basketball there, right?
Yes.
Didn't play football.
That's correct.
You come out of there, you get drafted by the Rams. And you show up in the locker room, and they hand you equipment.
Yeah, it was really...
And he's still trying to figure it out.
it wasn't hand-me-downs, but at least... but it was really similar because, as Gary had mentioned, the pads have to go in a certain way.
Right.
And because I hadn't played football in college, I was at first day of training camp. I was sitting next to a guy, and I was looking over at him out of the corner of my eye. And of course, I don't think that he really appreciated that. But I was just, and I explained to him. I said, "Look, I hadn't played in a few years. I just want to make sure I've got my pads in right." And of course, we became good friends from that point. But it certainly was the foundation was established here in Jacksonville High School.
Let's talk about the football season in particular. It wasn't like the 63 football team had great success, and boy, you guys were going to roll down the out in the field and roll over everybody. Yet there were some challenges in the 63 football team, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd like to put that in context. Okay. I wrote about it in this little. There were some great athletes in that 63 team.
Sure.
The problem is they all got hurt. I mean, I think the first line offense and defense, three quarters of them got hurt. That was kind of good news and bad news for us because the bad news was they were hurt and we were going to struggle. The good news for juniors, we got to play. I speak for myself, I probably would have been sitting on the bench the whole junior year had Rick Watson not gotten hurt. But I got to play the whole junior year because the starting center got hurt.
Yeah.
And I had a year's experience going into my senior year. But there were some great athletes on that team, and if they hadn't gotten hurt, I'm sure they would have had a very successful season, too.
One of the biggest sins we have in radio is assuming some things, and I've been playing that game here. Terry, let's go around the three of you guys. You tell us what you did in each one of the sports, what position you played, and where you plugged in.
In football, I played quarterback, but then Denny Sargent came in town. I played quarterback freshman year, started, broke my ankle. Sophomore year, Denny Sargent came into town from Princeton, Illinois, and he was such a great athlete, I backed him up in football. Basketball, I played freshman, sophomore year, and didn't play junior, senior, and then I played first base mostly in baseball on the baseball team.
Wait a minute. First base. First basemen are supposed to be 6'3".
Right.
And he's left-handed. That's a good start.
Yeah, left-handed.
Gary, what about you?
Football, I played center. I always tell the story, Itchy Jones, the very first practice freshman year, basically said, "Okay, all you guys go out and stand in the position you want to play." Well, I think of 35 guys or something, 20 of them wanted to be halfbacks, 5 of them wanted to be quarterbacks, some ends. There were no linemen. Nobody wanted to be – nobody. And he told me the second practice, he said, "You know, we need a center, and if you'd play center, you'd get to play, you have a good chance to play a lot." Well, I'm signing up, I'm your center. And I went back home and said, "I don't even know what a center is. I don't, what does a center do?" But I played center all 4 years, basketball, I was a forward, affectionately a junior and senior year on the hamburger squad, were pushed around by Steve Bone and those guys. In baseball, I was a catcher. I caught.
Creston?
In football, I was a running back. I almost didn't play football because my freshman year, I decided that I just didn't really want to play. I'd never done it before and hadn't had any experience doing it. And my brother, who was a junior, had told Coach Krauser when he asked, he said, "What about your brother? Is he going to play football?" And my brother said, "No, he says he's too light to play football, lightweight." And so Coach Krauser says, "Is he too light or is he too chicken?" You know. My brother comes home that night and he says, "Hey, Coach Krauser said you're a chicken." So I showed him, you know, I decided I'm going to come out there. And but in basketball, I played guard. And I didn't play baseball my freshman year because I didn't think I'd have a chance to get a letter. My parents told me that if you want to get a letter jacket, you have to earn a letter. And so I went out for track, and I ran track, and I still to this day have that letter that I had earned, and she bought me a letter jacket, you know, but she said, "You're not going to get a letter jacket unless you've got a letter to put on." So that was special.
Buford, I don't know if you know the disservice you did to these guys. I was looking through the articles that Gary put together in the scrapbook. Each time you allow the opposing coach to see the starting lineup for every game. That was just the way it
was
done.
I guess that's
back
not
then.
Done too much anymore.
No, it's
but
not.
It seemed like the thing to do at the time, and what's I don't see any problem with that. Now, if your point is they didn't scout as much as they do now, then true. I'm sure first time Coach Krauser saw the Decatur lineup, Decatur Eisenhower lineup, it was the first time he'd heard of some of these guys. Now everything's taped, and you trade tapes, and you send coaches to every game. But it seemed like the thing to do at the time, and I don't apologize for that.
No, yeah, and I said that sarcastically, because anymore, when we reach out to coaches and asking for lineups, it's like asking for trade secrets.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to give it to you until you're right before the game, and some of them will specifically say, do not share this information with the other coaches.
Yeah. And I think, didn't we use the weights of those guys to the starters?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever pay attention to that, but I think you would agree that today's high school kids, on average, 15, 20 pounds heavier.
Or at least.
Yeah. At least.
I noticed that.
Big people.
I have a bone to pick with you, because if you
what
if you, you look at those clippings, I gained about 30 pounds one week, then I lost about 30 pounds the next week, then I gained about 10, and it's like,
well,
I never weighed 180 in my life, you know? And I think Rosenberger, one year, we were playing somebody that had a bigger line, and everybody's weight went up that week, you know?
You did. You used what Rosie gave you. You know that. Yeah, he could play that game.
And we want to talk more about the coaching staff, but back then, what was considered a big player?
Yeah.
I mean, because last night we're all looking at kids who are 6'5", 340, you know, 6'3", 315, and I'm talking about for Eisenhower and Meganson.
Well, I'm the only lineman here, so let me talk about the line. These guys can talk about the backfield. I was 150. John Miner was like maybe 155. Roger Patterson was 155, maybe.
Dripping wet.
George Davis. George told me last night he was about 220, but by the first game he was 195 because of the two-a-days and all the other stuff. Mike Matovich was about 220. And a side story, that Mike was 220. He was there last night. He's at 202. He weighs less now than he did when he was in high school. Dennis Weghoff, what was Dennis, maybe 160, 70, something like
that.
Tommy Andrews is pretty big. He's about 200.
And that was considered huge.
Yeah, that was anybody that had a 2 in front of it was huge.
Yeah, Chris, what did you dress out at in those days?
I think I was at 160 pounds.
Quick, though.
Well, yeah.
You had to be.
And, you know, I think that's what made the difference in our team. We played against some bigger guys, but we were quick, we played well, and we were, you know, we were coached well.
Yeah.
And that made a big difference.
Well, and that was one of the things that was such a highlight for John Miner, and the fact that made him so effective. He wasn't big, but he was so quick and reacted so quickly that compensated for
like to hit people.
Yeah.
I just thought of something else, Gary. We were mentioned earlier, touched on this. You're 500 or one below the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
This year. But they were undefeated in 60. I think 58 and 59.
Right.
Some of those players, like McPike and Norton, Spangenberg.
Norton. Yeah.
Were they some of your heroes? Did you know them?
Oh, yeah. Definitely so.
I lived across the street from Bill Sims.
Oh, yeah, Bill could play.
Bill was the starting halfback, the All-State point guard, the shortstop on the baseball team, and when he did have extra time, he went and ran the 100 and had the 100 record here for years and years. I rode to school with Bill Sims. Now, in the car going to school was Wes Coulter, state discus champion, and these guys were giants. They were bigger than life. I saw Bill last night, and Bill's about half my size. And
Bill Sims was one of the best.
To me, this is almost a little bit. It's not quite, but it's almost Friday Night Lights. As a junior higher, you would go to the football games, and you idolize those guys in those red jerseys out there. And I want to do that someday.
Chris, who did you emulate somewhat?
Well, I think that many of the people during that era, Merritt Norvell was a great role model, I thought. And, of course, Milt McPike, he was a member of our church, and I knew their families. And to me, it was more not only just the athletic prowess that they had, but the character issues. And it's something you don't see as much anymore as the domestic violence situation in the NFL would point out, that there's so many issues that are non-football or basketball related that distract from an athlete's character. And I always was impressed with the fact that they were such positive role models. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to get too preachy here, but that starts at home, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the upbringing. It's how you were taught when you were younger. Yeah. You did this. Yeah. And if you did this,
absolutely,
this is what would happen.
I mentioned earlier the respect for coaches. That meant teachers, too. That meant adults. You didn't talk back to adults. You get one upside the head if you talk back to a coach.
What would have happened if you would have called any of your teachers or your coaches by their first name?
Oh, it just didn't happen. Period. I don't know. I can't tell you because I never knew anybody that did it.
You would have gotten to see Mr. Rosenberger, who was the boys' dean, and you didn't want to see Mr. Rosenberger, particularly in a non-football situation.
But I think one of the things, and I may have mentioned that to you earlier, Gary, was the fact that I personally, as I come back here now, it took me 50 years to realize it, but the foundation that I received here in Jacksonville, for the community, the school, my teammates, helped me transition into a lot of the things that I was fortunate enough to do in a more successful way because of this foundation. And that was is something that I really appreciate now. I appreciated it then, but I didn't recognize it then. I didn't understand just how intense the training and the foundation that had been set would be for me as prepared me for future activities I'd have in life.
We've been hogging the limelight up to this point. Anybody has any questions, observations, remembrances, feel free to call in at 243-4351. Buford, you talked about unbeaten seasons. Let's see, in 1956, they had three straight years unbeaten, although in 58, they tied one. In 59, they were 5-3, unbeaten in 60. In 61, 5-3-1, 62, 8-1, 63, the year before you guys, 4-5, and then unbeaten in 64.
Think about that and how that would be read on the sports pages around the state today, records like that. I mean, we're talking dominations like Sacred Heart Griffin now.
Yeah.
Joliet Catholic for years. There were no playoffs. Mm-hmm. That didn't come till 73, I think, about 10 years after you guys left. Wouldn't that have been interesting to see how good some of those other teams in you
would
guys
have loved it. Would have
been. Well, and I ask Chris because that was a question that came to mind. It's so easy to think now. Hey, you have a great year, by golly. Head to playoffs. Let's go after it.
Yeah.
Then. You had a great year.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
What year did the classifications of high schools come in? Because we didn't have
in football?
Yes.
73.
Yeah.
It was 73.
72 or 73.
For all the sports, and that, is that not right?
Oh, well, basketball came in as two and is now five.
Four.
That started in 74, 75.
Chuck Rolinski.
A year or two after football.
Who just passed away.
Yes. Was not universally accepted, by the way.
Including by people in the station.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Buford, but I remember Jerry Simons at the time.
Oh, I didn't think it was the way to go in basketball, and I was living in the past, I guess, with the Hebrons and the Hoosiers movie.
And to reinforce that, Buford, is that I don't know if you remember the Cobden Apple Knot.
Oh, sure I do.
Oh, yeah.
That was an incredible story of this little small town in high school.
64.
I think they either won it or got
I think they lost to Pekin in the finals.
But there was no classification.
There were like two families there, Smith and something made up. And two of the best players drowned the summer before.
Oh my gosh.
In a school of less than 100.
We always used to say they brought their wives and kids to the game. You know,
you had mentioned not wanting to be preachy and family values. One thing that I always remember, and I don't think they do that anymore, but Crowsher and Rosie every Sunday had us go to a different church.
Yeah.
As a family.
Not as their church,
no,
but a team.
Every,
church.
I mean,
we went to different churches every
as a team or
as a team.
Wow. Every Sunday.
There's a letter from one of the pastors in the very last page
I
of
saw that.
And he thanked us for coming to his. Now you can imagine poor church showing up, and here's 25 scraggly guys.
And I'm sure the first thought from the preacher or the priest or whoever's in charge was, boy, I hope we don't have to feed these guys. We can't do that.
Can I give you a little bit, another perspective
on
our football team? and I don't know if Chris and I had thought about this. I don't know if you would agree. Our 64-63 basketball team was very successful.
Yes.
And I think we were, now as I look back on it, because football had been 4-5, we were looking at basketball going, yay, we're going to have a really good year. I don't know that we ever thought about football. We just came out, played the game. I think execution was part of our, you know, it's kind of the old Green Bay thing. You're going to run this play and you're going to execute it. And that was Rosenberger. I mean, he'd run that play forever until you got the right blocks and you got the, but we weren't looking for, there was some anticipation the basketball team was going to really be good.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It was, and it was, but you kind of overlooked football saying, hey, you know,
well, I agree, but I think that it goes back to one's perspective. When you're a junior or senior in high school, you don't look at things
right.
Like
exactly.
We do now as we analyze it, or certainly as Buford and Jerry did over the years. It's just you're having fun, and like I said, the prom's coming up and homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other things, and I think that's important. Because as I used to coach my son and my daughter when they were small, and the greatest compliment I got as a coach was a little boy came up to me and said, "Coach Whitaker, did we win?" You know, and that's what
they
it's
had
about.
Fun.
That's what it should be. And you've got plenty of time to get serious about it.
And I also don't know that we set out to be undefeated. We took one game at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, the beginning of the season, we focused on Eisenhower's the first game.
Yeah.
This is what we
got
to do with Eisenhower.
That was a close
and Terry
game.
Mentioned the other day, which I don't know if you got to ask Coach Moy this, but Terry would run the scout team on every Monday.
Yeah.
And he would have, okay, here's Taylorville. This is what Taylorville does. And Terry would run those plays again. Somebody in our coaching staff had to go see Taylorville.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we never knew who it was. I don't even pay attention in those days. As retrospective, like somebody had to go see them, but we didn't have film or anything. But you had okay, you know, this guy's a you know this is the plays they're going to run, and this guy is really quick. We got to keep him bottled up or whatever it might be.
By the way, Terry, I have more in common with you than I do with these other two guys because I was backup quarterback my senior year, and I also did. I ran the team plays of the other team and got the crap beat out of me at times.
What do you have? Rosie and Krause are pretty strict as far as team rules. girls are out of the question, right? Well, maybe they're related.
You could have
well, since his daughter was in our class, they, you know.
She's about the only one who's offline.
They were all kind of like our.
What I'm talking about. Sleeping and eating, and you had to be home by.
You had to be at your curfews. You know, no smoking,
more,
no drinking.
It was
no,
more of our parents setting the rules than it was the coach. Because
I see Rosie going to your parents and saying, "Hey,
Marguerite and Leroy Whitaker had me home at 10 o'clock every night."
Same
my senior year.
Same with Adolph and Dorothy Domrell. You know,
so did Ken and Gene Book.
Yeah. We are rolling up toward the top of the hour. We've got somebody calling in. We've got to take a commercial break. I'm running behind. It's pretty much normal for this time of the morning. Gary Scott, Buford Green. We've got Terry Damereaux. We've got Gary Book and Creston Whitaker as our guests this morning, part of that 64 undefeated football team in an outstanding year all the way around. Let's go to the telephone for this one. Yes, do you have a comment or question? You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Don from Fort Myers.
Oh, Don, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I heard the game last night, and I have to admit I was around for the 64 team because I was going to school at the School for the Blind there. So I remember you all very well and remember that team, and I just wanted to call and let you know I was thinking of all of you.
Well, that's appreciated, and Don, thanks for listening. You were able to listen to the game last night all the way through.
I sure was. I was not too impressed. I thought, I'm not sure whether we're playing hot potato or football, but it did straighten out in the second half.
They really did. Hey, I appreciate your call.
Okay. Well, you guys take care and have a great time down there now.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Is he still on?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. He's left.
I don't know. Did Don say he was at the School for the Blind?
Yeah.
Well,
great.
At the same time?
Yes. Yeah.
John, I was going to ask him if he knew Johnny Miner, because Johnny then went to IC, played football, and then worked part-time at the School for the Blind.
I didn't know that.
And then he went into visually impaired education at Albany, New York.
I'll be darned. Yeah. That's an interesting tie-in. We're at the top of the hour. We need to take a station ID and a break as well. When we come back, we'll talk about some of those who aren't with us now. We'll talk about the coaching staff as well and more memories from that 64 undefeated football season. WLDS Jacksonville, back after these. The studio this morning, Terry Damereau, Gary Book, Creston Whitaker, Buford Green, Gary Scott with you. Sportsline for this Saturday morning. Really, what's a special weekend. Thank goodness JHS football won and played very well in the second half, winning 42-20 last night. Buford, you and I know, and I think these guys have a good sense, and I talked to Creston about it earlier this week, how highly Jerry Simons held this team throughout the years.
Oh, no question. We talked about it on this show for 40-plus years. Just a special group, and they spoiled us. The local media spoiled us. And maybe to re-spoil the fans. Because it's never been better, and it's never been better since. Yeah, Jerry, we talked about this time to time. Maybe now we'll wait till Creston gets in.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read 14 or 15 seniors.
Something like that, yeah.
And they virtually all of them played a key role here or there. By the way, Gary, great job on the program.
Yeah.
And all
it's
the
all your writing, so it was really easy to do.
Again, I go back to that. That was outstanding.
Yeah, you had to spend a lot of time on that. I know you did. And it's a keeper.
I'll tell you a short story about that. It's Bill Sims, I said, lived across the street.
Yeah.
Bill
Sims'
father kept a scrapbook for Bill and Bobby, and I was a little kid, and I'd walk across the street, and he would show me the scrapbook. So when I was probably in sixth grade, I thought, you know, that's a pretty good idea. So I think the first clipping was probably sixth grade basketball. We won the city YMCA tournament.
Oh, my.
Danny Warkup was our coach.
Danny Warkup.
Big stuff.
And I cut that out, and forever, if I was suited up in the game, and not necessarily even playing, I kept a clipping, and I've got all that, and so that's what I used for.
Wow.
But in those days, as you say, the Friday night was a kind of a preamble to the game, and then Saturday was Coach Krauser is always saying, you know, this guy's going to start, or this guy's going to do whatever, and you hope your name got in there or something. So,
quick story here.
Yeah,
I think I learned early on I better treat you guys right. There was a famous story about back in the 30s or 40s, Journal Courier was without a sports editor. And some guy who worked there in a different department said, I'll do it. So he covered that first game. I think the first game he covered was homecoming. And he wrote the next day that the boys last night seemed more interested in the dance after the game. And he went out to talk to Krauser next Monday.
Short conversation?
And no. The boys jacked up his car about an inch off the ground each wheel. So he couldn't leave.
Let's go to the telephone. Let's jump in here. Yes, your comment or question, please.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice hearing all you guys reminisce about the season. This is for Creston. As I remember, he played some pro football with New Orleans and Los Angeles Rams. And I would like him to go into that. I believe he was recommended by Eddie Metter, if I'm not mistaken, and when he was at college. And I'd like him to talk a little bit about his pro career, if he would, and also how well he knew George Allen. I always thought he was just a great, great coach. And if you'd kick that around a little bit.
Sure. All right. Well, we'll talk about it. Thank you very much for calling in.
Yes.
Well, that's... Wow, I'm surprised that I'm not sure who that was or how they knew what they did, especially when they mentioned Eddie Metter, because that's exactly what had happened. I was at North Texas, and I was playing basketball, but at that time the Cowboys were known for drafting basketball players, mm-hmm. and there were several that had been drafted. Well, Eddie Metter, who was an all-pro safety for the Los Angeles Rams, lived in Denton, which is the town that I was going to school in. And when the Cowboys started coming out to scout me, he got wind of it, and so he called George Allen, and so George Allen sent a scout out, and so I had worked out for both organizations, and I had not heard anything else from the Los Angeles Rams, but the Cowboys finally had contacted me and said, well, we'd like to sign you. So they were actually in my dorm room, and the phone rang. And, of course, those days we didn't have cell phones, didn't have phones in your room, so I had to go down the hall to answer the phone. It was George Allen. And he said, hey, I've been out of town, but I've had a chance to look at some of the numbers and things, and we'd like to sign you. And I said, well, the Cowboys are here right now. He said, well, if you not sign with them, he said, we'll fly you out here this weekend, and we'll match whatever they're offering you. And that's what I did. And so that was such a surprise that this person there knew that. I there's not many people that know how that happened.
The number you wore, was it 41?
49.
49, yeah. Okay. I knew it was in the 40s.
Oh, Bobby Mitchell, you may remember him. He was one of my heroes in football. You don't see that number much anymore, but that was my number, 49.
I related to Crest that I've been a Rams fan forever. When they were in L.A., my next-door neighbor was a big Rams fan, and I became a Rams fan almost by default. And I remember Creston Whitaker in a Rams uniform. I remembered his number was in the 40s. I just wasn't sure which number it was. So that was kind of neat that I had to get a chance to talk to him.
Tony Monday Night Football story?
Nah.
You guys got a story you want to share?
Jerry Settles and I used to room together, and Gary Zimmer, and one Monday night, you know, Monday Night Football was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So we'd always get together, and the Rams were playing that night, and all of a sudden, we're sitting there, we had a few beers, and, well, there goes Whitaker. Look at that guy. And it was Howard Cosell, and I thought, we really paid attention. We said, wow, Creston Whitaker.
That had to be neat. Creston, before you came back and joined us, I was talking after the commercial break, talking about some of the people that have passed on, unable to attend this weekend. And we began with Jerry Simons. I think his spirit is in this room, and he would have loved to have done this program with you guys. And but there are some other people missing from that team. Let's talk about Larry Welch. You talked about John Miner a couple of times. And any one of you guys want to jump in, feel free.
Well, obviously, Larry was killed in Vietnam in March of 1968. He was our starting halfback. He was a beloved member of the hamburger squad and the basketball team, and he was our starting left fielder in baseball. He was a heck of an athlete. I always tell it, Larry was the guy that would run over people. Creston was the guy that outrun people. But so if you needed three tough ones, you gave it to Larry. If you needed 15, you gave it to Creston. So, but Larry was killed in Vietnam, and all of us were, you know, just shocked at, and weren't surprised that he went to officers' candidate school. Was a second he was a leader. He was a second lieutenant and killed in Vietnam. When I got started with this thing, I thought, you know, we got to honor Larry some way. And the other piece of that story is Larry had a son who was born 1 month after he was killed. And so here's a young man, and I always think of him as a little kid. He's 47 years old now, but who never met his dad. And so when I put some of this together, I put a big scrapbook together, which had all 4 years of football, basketball, baseball. And we took it out to Larry's. I got in contact with actually Larry's sister, and the three of us, Dennis Sargent, Don Cook, Larry Domro, his brother, we went out to their home the other night and gave that to Larry, to Larry Jr. Mm-hmm. And then we sat down for 2 or 3 hours and just shared remembrances of Larry. And
it had to have been special.
He was a great guy.
Really good.
And John Miner, you've talked about him before. He died several years out of high school, obviously, mm-hmm. and died of a disease. But very important part of that football team.
Absolutely.
Played linebacker?
Middle linebacker.
And guard.
He played guard. He was a starting left or right guard, whatever it was, and the middle linebacker. But middle linebacker was his calling. From our freshman year, man, he was the guy, and he wasn't big. I mean, he 150 pounds, but as I say, he was in the hole before the back was in the hole, and I think he led the team in tackles, if I'm not familiar. He or George Davis led the team in tackles, and a great guy. And he played baseball with us. I don't remember what position John played, but he didn't play basketball, but he played baseball.
Second, too. I think he was second.
Second baseman, maybe. Yeah, great guy.
Gary had four sisters. Not Gary, but Johnny Miner. Yeah, and how he was pretty aggressive. And you'd think with four sisters around, he wouldn't be. You know, but he was really great. Not only that, he was a really great guy.
And probably protective of his four sisters.
Yeah,
that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
Coaching staff. Yeah, you had a couple of them there last night. Dan Moy was there, and Itchy Jones came back for it too. And
Dean Farmer.
Dean Farmer. Oh, Dean Farmer. I didn't see him.
Bernie Gregory, which we were not able to get a hold of.
Which leads me to my next question is for Chris. You told me a story off the air that was it your freshman, sophomore year going down to Taylorville to play ball? And this, I think this speaks volume of the quality of that team and the quality of that staff.
Yes. My sophomore year, when I was 15, our junior varsity team went to Taylorville to play football that afternoon. And after the game, we went to a restaurant, and when we got in the restaurant, the owner walked up to Coach Farmer and Coach Gregory and said, "Look, we can't serve him," referring to me, and since I was the only African American, I'm sure it wasn't because of my body odor or what have you. But, so immediately, without blinking an eye, Coach Gregory and Farmer stood up and said, "Well, if you can't serve him, you're not going to serve any of us, and we're out of here." And everybody stood up and walked out of there. Even though it was a hungry ride back to Jacksonville, the thing that resonates with me then and has carried throughout my life is the fact that that's what a team is.
Yeah.
To everyone there, the coaches, it didn't matter what color you were, as long as the only color that mattered was your jersey. And we all had the same color jersey. And that was very special. And had that have been handled differently, I don't know how that would have affected my life.
And the team, too. I mean, you separated the team into different segments.
We were like family.
Buford?
Yeah. There was a fair number of black kids on your team.
Oh, yeah.
During that era, I wasn't going back to Mike Pikes and Earls and all.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything special I'm aware of, except there were some good black athletes.
Absolutely.
Down through the years. And there's a fair representation now. Quick aside to Creston's story. Summer after you graduate, I think it was, I managed the Jacksonville team in a little eight league, which played around. Crest played for us a few games.
Is it baseball?
Summer. Baseball.
Baseball.
Oh. We go down to Florence. On the Illinois River.
Uh-huh. Good old boys playing baseball.
Some good old boys. Might have been a couple of rednecks around.
Just a little bit.
But we rolled in. Creston got out. And one of the good old boys, I won't mention his name, called me over and said, "Who's that?" I said, "That's Crest Whitaker. He's a pretty good athlete in high school." He said, "Yeah, I heard of him. Supposed to be pretty quick, isn't he?" I said, "Yeah, he can run a little." He said, "Well, he was a catcher." He said, "I'll tell you what, he won't steal on me." Ran wild. I know he stole four or five bases that day. It was retribution.
I knew Bob Crowder just barely. I was introduced to him several times by Buford and by Jerry. I knew Al Rosenberger a little bit better. He was still around for a long time. I'd like to pick your brains a little bit, guys, about your remembrances of both those guys, because they were... What I'm hearing this morning, they were the heart and soul of the team.
Well, yeah. They're the gold standard.
I think what I remember the most is the combination that they had as a tandem. I mean, Crowder was the offensive guru, and he was prepared all the time and very calm, never really got real excited, and Rosie was the opposite. I mean, you wanted to have a motivator. And he was the defensive guy, and they knew what their positions were as far as coaching, and Crowder was the head coach. Rosie was the assistant, but they were just a great combination. And kind of as a conclusion, the last game of the year was with Hannibal. They had a great running back, Maurice Forte. And Crowder was, you know, he had known his teams, and this kid was one of the best halfbacks in Missouri. And so he was real nervous. And we got over, it was the last game of the year, and he knew that how important this was to win the game. And so he gave us a, like, kind of like last night when we went into the field house before the game, we were talking to the guys. Well, Crozier could hardly talk to the team. He was so nervous, but Rosie stepped up, and he was always the guy that kept us all going. And we went and beat him, I think, 40-something to 20.
Yes. Gary, did you always know where you stood with those two guys?
Oh, geez. If you were playing, you were in good shape. If you were running laps after the game, you knew you weren't probably in good shape. But Terry's right. They complimented each other. Rosenberger was the he was an ex-Marine, first of all. Mm-hmm. And
that's the way he ran practice.
And he was the conditioning guy. He was the rah-rah guy. He was the, you know, and I've reflected back on this, you know, because I wasn't big. I wasn't, you know, but it was, he taught you how to play the position, and then he expected excellence. He expected you to block that guy every single time, not one out of three, not, you know, one out of ten. But if your job was to move the middle guard left or right, he expects you to do that every time. And if you didn't, you'd come off the field, and he'd have his hands in your face mask. And I've told the story before about I was the long snapper, okay? And we were playing Landfear. Then there was a guy named Babe Gabriel who had a reputation for being a pretty tough guy. So I go to the first long snap of the game, and who would I see across from me but Babe Gabriel? And my memory was his forearms looked like, you know, watermelons, and he looked like Popeye, you know. So the first responsibility of a center in a long snap is get the ball to the punter, number one, and two, to block. Now, this is these days they won't let you hit the center.
Yeah.
In those days, they'd put two guys over the top of you or whatever.
Just ready
and John
to
Minor and Roger Patterson would help to try to keep you from getting killed, you know. Well, I got those two mixed up, and I bounced the ball back to Larry. Larry Welch was the punter. I came off the field, and Rosenberger had his hands in my face mask, and he said, "Don't you ever do that again." And I swear to God, I never bounced another one back there.
Denny Sargent, or Gary, is not with us today because he had to go back to Texas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I told him I was going to ask you guys about this and see if it's true. I remember, maybe it was my impression, that Crozier was kind of an old-fashioned, he liked to run the ball.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question.
And so did Rosenberger. He was.
But when Denny Sargent
got there, he liked the physical aspects of the game.
Yeah.
Especially junior and senior year, especially senior year.
Absolutely.
Did he make up some plays on his own that, in the heat of the game, I mean, I'm talking in terms of, I can beat that guy down the line there. Did he take some in his own hand?
Well, I'll tell you two things. One, in those days, the quarterback called his own plays.
Right.
Which is, to me, more fun as a player than instead of having somebody send in a play. So he called your own plays. He also had some guys, Bob Lobolino, Dennis Weghoff. Those guys could catch the ball. Mm-hmm. Tom Andrews, Steve Tavender. You threw it out there. And again, it's back to this excellence thing. If you get your hands on the ball, they expect you to catch it. And those guys did. So Dennis had some great targets, and he threw balls out of the backfield to these guys. But they called your own plays. Yeah. But you, as an offensive lineman, you'd come up and you'd say, you know what, the guy across from me, we can handle him, you know, with the four holes open. And would he wouldn't call it that time, but he'd come right back to that play, and he'd run right to that four hole. I don't remember ever making up plays.
Well, I shouldn't say make up, but the ball was thrown more than it had been.
Oh,
in the past.
Yeah.
And with good cause, good reason.
And he was such an accurate passer that I think that really, at that point, changed the offense quite a bit for the rest of the football years because he was.
I agree.
You know, you watch it today?
Yeah,
throw it 40, 50 times.
I was going to say, that last night, how many times did Brandon throw it?
I was
threw it over 50
told
times
yesterday
night?
By a coach at Jacksonville, they have the old, they had took the 16-millimeter tapes and they put them on DVD, and he asked if anybody wanted them, and I'm going to get copies of them, and the games that I played well, you know. We're not going to look at the other ones, you know.
Make sure it's edited.
That's right. If I bounce anything back there, it's not going to be edited out.
Chris, I direct this to you, and Buford kind of touched on a little bit about the plays. I don't know what the playbook at Jacksonville High School is now. I don't know if there are 10 plays down there. I don't know if there's 140 plays. But when you guys were seniors, were there many plays in the playbook?
I don't know that the number of plays is something that I recall as much as the consistency of the plays. It really was easy to, with the T formation we had.
Mm-hmm.
The left halfback was the three. Had the number three, the right halfback had the number four, and the fullback had the number two. So if he calls a 33, then the left halfback goes through the three hole. If he calls a 44, the right half goes through the four hole, and so on. And a lot of times they would mix those things up, but you were able to understand and kind of get into a rhythm with and Dennis was excellent at mixing those particular plays up. As Gary said, someone will come back and say, hey, the four hole's open. I think I can move this guy off to the side. And so Dennis would come in and call a play that would go through there. But and as Buford had said, as far as the passing goes, yeah, I think Dennis and that particular team was way ahead of its time as far as passing the football goes, because most of the teams around did not pass anything like that.
Well, Don Kemp always had the philosophy, and I'm not sure Rosenberger and Krauser did too, that you throw the football, what?
Right,
three things could happen.
Yeah, too, or bad. Yeah. Well, that was
called like Woody Hayes.
Yeah, oh yeah,
practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
They weren't alone, and the game has evolved or gone backwards. I'm not sure which, but it's changed. And the simple system that Creston mentions, the two-hole four. Mm-hmm. Listen to some of those announcers, the Grudens of today, and they've got all kinds of fancy names for it. Why did that happen? The other team picking up the signals or something?
And Creston, I was kind of and along the same line. I thought the same thing, Buford, when you became a member of the Rams and later on of the Saints. I mean, right now you hear, you know, Dallas 4-3 split right, you know, and the description is a full sentence, and I don't know how many plays you had to learn as a Ram or as a Saint.
Well, you still have the same type of consistency. The main reason for the complicated calls, I think Peyton Manning's big thing is Omaha.
Yeah, you know, or some word that he picks up on.
You know, but the key to it is that there are many of the calls are dummy calls.
Yeah.
And it's to try to throw the defense off. They change even within the game itself. And there's always a key word or a key number. For example, if they call the play on two in the huddle, whenever he comes out to the line of scrimmage, it doesn't matter what he's saying, but if he uses the number two, then it's live, and that's what they're changing it to. And vice versa, if there's another word that or Omaha before the number two always means it's live. In other words, Omaha before three or Omaha on one doesn't mean anything. But that way the other team doesn't know.
Similar in baseball where they start touching their bill or the cap and their right. shoulders and their kneecap.
Exactly.
And scratching
exactly.
their butt and doing this. All, and yeah. so it's only that
you guys
one thing.
Play at the line of scrimmage much?
Yeah. There were a lot of
systems out where you change it.
Yeah, absolutely. I still have I'm sure this is probably true today, but I was talking to AT the other night about our freshman year. I knew it now. I didn't necessarily know it then, but Itch was an All-State basketball player. He was an All-State. He went to Southern on two scholarships, baseball and basketball. But he knew nothing about football. And he's our freshman football coach. Now, I was teasing him last night. Said, that was on-the-job training for you, wasn't it? You didn't know anything. Well, Krauser... I've still got the plays, and they were mimeographed, purple mimeographed, and it started with a 21, then it was a 21-36, then it was a 21-36-45, then it was a 21-36 pass and a 21-36 reverse, but they all, and they just kept building on it from freshman year, and then my sophomore year in the same plays, they would add some, but by the time you were junior and seniors,
it was second nature.
It was second nature. And from his perspective in the hole, as an offensive lineman, you knew where you had to block and where you had to take somebody because it was coming through your hole.
But going back to your question, Buf, Sargent would call quite a few audibles, and he was perceptive. He knew the defense, and that happened quite a bit.
Wagoff would tell him, hey, I've got this guy beat, and whenever you need me, and he'd come up and...
How many times during the game did he say that, though?
25% of the time, maybe. Yeah. But he would look at the defense. He'd look who he had in the field. And
sure,
if Tom Andrews was 6'2" and he's been guarded by a 5'5" guy, you know,
yeah,
you're going to get a basketball pass or something. You know that, and we did a lot of that at the end zone because we had guys who were basketball players playing in, and you know, they just throw the ball up there and let Dennis Wagoff go get it. You know,
we need to take another break. We're running behind, believe it or not. The guys are with us. Thanks for joining us. Call in 243-4351. Back after these. Back on the air. Welcome. We've got people on the line. Let's go to the telephone. Yes, pick this one up. Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes, this is a question towards Preston Whitaker. I had went to the ball game last night because he was a big hero of mine as a kid when I went to school there. And my sisters used to take me to the games and stuff. And so last night when I wanted to get a picture of him. Uh-huh. So I asked him. I said, could I get a picture of you? And he looked at me and goes, well, sure you can. So I said, okay. So I started. He said, well, wait a minute. Put the camera, give it to this nice lady there. And he stood beside me and he says, now let's take a picture. It's taken me 50 years to get that picture. I'm 58 years old, and I finally got
it. Well, that's good.
I just hope it turns out good. I just couldn't believe it. And when I got home last night, I thought, whew, I can't believe it. I got a picture of my hero. And, you know, great guy. Great guy, great team, and I'll never forget him.
Hey, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
yes,
Dad.
Yes, your question or comment, please. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
All right. This is a little sidebar for Larry Domro. He probably doesn't know it, but he's got a slight connection to the quarterback on this team as opposed to his 50 years ago. His Dorothy Damro that he spoke of, my cousin, and I'm granddad of Joe Brannan.
Okay, so you're the granddad of Joe Brannan, and Dorothy Damro was a cousin of yours.
That's correct.
I'll be darned.
So what's your name?
What's your name, sir?
Daryl Mansfield.
You say, what's the name again?
Daryl Mansfield.
Daryl Mansfield.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Hey, we appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
Terry, those are the kind of connections that are neat you find in small towns.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. By the way, Larry's my twin brother.
I called him Larry. That caller called him Larry. It's Terry. Okay.
Right. But my mom was a Mansfield, Dorothy. Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to go through the scores that year. And I want you to pay particular attention to the competition because so many times those of us who played football subsequent years, they think, oh, those guys probably played Winchester and they played Bluffs and they played Pittsfield. Here's the teams that Jacksonville beat that year. Opened the year by beating Decatur Eisenhower 14-6. Beat Taylorville 20-7. Beat MacArthur 27-0. Beat Christian Brothers, later became Quincy Notre Dame, 26-0. Jerseyville, 25-6. Griffin, we all know that, 26-7. Lanphier, 20-6. Monmouth, 27-15. And Hannibal, 48-20. No pushovers in that group.
Yeah.
No, that's representative schedule. Won the first Capital Conference championship for the school. No, that's... I'm guessing two-thirds of those schools are bigger than Jacksonville.
I would think.
But what was the enrollment during your years? It's 900 now.
No, yeah, I can tell you. It's 13. I think, Gary, you may have had it somewhere. I saw it somewhere. Either 1330 or 1306.
There were 300 and some in our class. It was a big class, and there's probably 1,300 kids.
Yeah. A little over 3. I think it was 315, 320, something like that.
Yeah,
and we were about 900 now.
We were a baby boomer.
Yeah, keep in mind, we were baby boomers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That made a big difference.
Yeah. That's
I don't know if Kristen remembers it, but I think the first game of the season, Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm. By the way, which was a thorn in your side throughout the year in terms of sports.
Well, Eisenhower and MacArthur both. If you go back and look at those records, some of those teams that went 8-1, MacArthur's the team that beat them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I reflect later, I'm sure glad they didn't tell us that MacArthur was one of the teams that beat all the time. We didn't know it. Yeah. But I think the Eisenhower game, as I remember, was very close until the very end, and we drove the whole length of the field to score and finally beat them. But it was—I can remember coming back to the huddle, going, "Okay, guys, it's now or never. We got to do it now, or it's not gonna happen."
Creston didn't remember this the other day when I talked to him. He may have recalled it since then, but Sargent was not available for the next to the last game against Monmouth.
Yeah, right. He and Tom Andrews were both hurt.
Yeah.
All right. Are you talking about our junior year or senior
year? No, senior year, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, he apparently had a
rib injury,
yeah, that kept him out of that game. So then you came back and you beat Hannibal the final weekend.
Mm-hmm.
How important was it to be unbeaten?
There was a lot in the paper that week reminding
me. I reflected on that, and my memory was that we played every game one game at a time. We really weren't thinking about undefeated. We were thinking about who the next opponent is and do your job and get your assignment and whatever. When it came down to, okay, now we're 8-0, and oh, my gosh. And this guy, Mr. Green here, wrote an article that basically talked about St. Joseph, Missouri, who had, and this was the early days of high school rankings, was ranking, I don't know, 1-2, whatever. And Hannibal had just barely lost to St. Joseph, Missouri. And so the implication in the article, Mr. Green, was these guys are up against some big time.
Don't
this
have
week.
A prayer.
And Krauser used that. He said, you know, these guys are really good. And I think all of us, we went into that game, I think myself particularly, went into that with a different attitude. We're not just going to win this game.
Yeah.
We're going to leave a mark here. Yeah. And we did.
Yeah, and also Hannibal had a player, I think Terry mentioned it earlier, Maurice Fort, and he went on to Minnesota, be an All-American running back. But for me personally, as far as the undefeated season, my oldest brother, who is deceased, Chauncey, was on the last undefeated team, which was in 1960.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of special for me. And from my perspective, I really was happy that I could be part of that.
So you wanted to match Chauncey at that point?
Yes. Yeah.
I think this guy had a 60-yard run and a 60-yard interception or something in that game. You were telling me about that interception the other night.
Yeah, Creston, relate that story because you mentioned that the other day.
Yeah, it was so funny. I was playing defensive back, and the quarterback was backpedaling, and then he decided to shuffle a pass to Maurice Ford. And I had my momentum going to the point where I just ran right between them, caught the ball, and I don't know how many yards it was, but that was really special.
We are running behind. Let's go ahead and take another commercial break. Thanks for tuning in on Sportsline on Saturday morning. Back after this. Back on the air, let's go right to the telephone. Thanks for calling in this morning. Your comment or question?
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is David Hayes. I have a kid currently at JHS and two more on their way. But I just wanted to call in. I wanted to thank the guys. I got to meet several of them last night. I knew one of them for a long time, Steve Morthole. I didn't know he was on this team until this event. So really I wanted to thank the foundation for getting that together and getting those guys back here, giving everybody a chance to meet him, a chance to hear this radio program. And I got to talk to Mr. Whitaker last night and told him over the years with both of my boys, I had pointed out his placard in the Hall of Fame and read those to him and several of the key athletes. And I'm more on the basketball side, so I tend to migrate towards the basketball guys. But it's my boys have heard these stories that I've heard handed down over and over, and it creates a bit of a heritage and a foundation. We got to talk about that last night. So it's a big thank you to the Hall of Fame as well, to keep those memories out there and keep people talking about this. It's a really positive thing, and like I said, I just want to say thank you to these guys, giving me and others a chance to meet them and hear their stories. So Hope you guys have a great day, and we'll be talking about these stories for a long time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Buford, and a tip to add to you and others who have put together the Hall of Fame. That's one of the reasons you put it together.
You bet. And let me add, first of all, I think Amy Albers did a great job of helping put this together.
Absolutely.
I plan to see that this program put together by Gary gets in the Hall of Fame. I have a scrapbook, compliments of Jerry Settles. Mm-hmm. That the Krauser family, probably Bob's wife, put together.
Oh, neat.
Very good job. And Bob Krauser also gave to Jerry a baseball autograph of all members of that team in 65 state tournament. That'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Good.
So, impressive.
You guys be involved.
Good.
Terry, you mentioned during the break, and something we ought to point out, very accurately so, this team was successful on the field. But the success in the classroom, the success in the other extracurricular activities was extraordinary.
Yeah. We had a great group of kids, not only athletically, but academically. And, you know, Steve Bowen and I and Steve Heron, Larry Welch, Larry Dahmer, we even sang it. We were in a cappella choir. We were in some plays. But academically, we had eight valedictorians in the class of 65. Yeah. First time ever they had that many valedictorians. And today when we find out where our old buddies are, a lot of them are very successful. So, you know, it wasn't just the sports. It's always the education.
We even won the homecoming float contest just to throw something in
there. You guys did it all. Let's go back to the phone real quickly. Yes, your comment or question, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to let them know that I'm younger than they are, and I had Coach Krauser as a teacher in the mid-70s. And he was a good teacher. I thought he was fair, but if you did something wrong, you didn't want to cross him.
No.
But did any of you have him or Rosenberger as a teacher?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll let him answer that. Thank you very much for calling.
I didn't. No.
Didn't he do driver's ed?
I believe he did.
I had Krauser for health. I remember that. But I don't know what
I had Coach Moy for chemistry. In fact, my college degree is in chemistry. And I talked to him. I've talked to him several times.
He was kind
of the inspiration to spark my interest in science, and I went on to get a degree in chemistry from Southern Illinois.
Gary, you still have a break, I think you said.
Yeah, we do.
As I watched the parade yesterday down East State, West State, and you guys went by the old high school.
Mm-hmm.
That had jocks memories about walking up those front steps every day.
Yeah.
And at the pregame ceremony last night, which is great, by the way.
Yeah.
Enjoyed meeting all these folks.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it went well after that at Mulligan's.
Mulligan's.
Has this been one of the top weekends of your life?
No question about it. And a lot of kudos go to Gary and then, as you mentioned, Amy Albers, who has just been very – both of them have been extremely helpful in coordinating this and making it happen, and it's just a privilege for me to be back here. Someone had told me that they wanted to thank me, but I want to thank you and this community for giving me the opportunity and planting that seed so that I could do the things that I was able to do. So it's really a privilege to be back.
So what he didn't tell you is he scored another touchdown last night. We ran a play, right?
What play was that? What'd you call that play?
It's 48.
48. Yeah, 48. Okay. Sergeant called it, pitched it, said, do what you do best, pitch it to Whittaker.
It would have been bad if you'd have fumbled that.
Yeah, that would
have
been
good.
Yeah, I
was thinking about that. Yeah. The ball was shaking.
Let's take one more break and we'll wrap it up this morning. What's your comment or question, please?
Hi, this is Walter Meyer. I just wanted to tell Creston and all those other young men, I remember McPikes and the Watts and Nortons and Norvells and Creston's parents. And the one good quality all these young men had was their parents.
Yeah.
And they were very supportive of all of them. And we were very fortunate in Jacksonville to have such wonderful families.
Doc, appreciate
your
call.
That's right.
Thank you very much. Buford, this has been fun this morning. As I know
it has been, as we knew it would be. A couple quick things before we close. Because he's at him up getting off on time. Because he's going to have to pay overtime now. Like that. Earlier in the show, I proclaimed this group as the best group of athletes to go through there in my 50 years here.
I think I'm ready now to proclaim the guy sitting to my right is the best all-around athlete in the last 50 years, at least. Yeah. I don't think the guys would argue with that.
No, I agree. No.
What he did in high school and what he accomplished afterwards.
Absolutely.
And the true gentleman he is.
Yeah.
So, you guys said thank the community. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, and again, maybe jump-started to some extent was that link to the past that JHS has to maintain to carry it through the future. I mean, I'll be shocked if you didn't make some sort of impression on a few of those football players last night. And some of what you might have represented and said at that time, you never know. They may be coming back 20, 30 years down the road saying the same thing that you guys are.
It's funny, yeah. Terry and I were at the end of Creston Tuscany. I gave a little talk in the locker room, mm-hmm. and I called out the guy. Says, who's wearing number 50? So I went out and found the young man and shook his hand, and I said, honor that jersey. And Terry did the same thing. He was number 11. So.
And then after the game, I went back to number 11. I said, way to go, buddy. You did great. Keep it up.
Thank you. I can't tell you how much it's meant to me and the community. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. Buford, thank you.
Yeah.
Matt Norville's next with Overtime. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next Saturday morning at 9:30.